Now, by way of introduction of what we're going to be talking about next, there's been, as you recall from maybe last week's show, we spoke to David Heap, who had a letter which he published along with many, many concerned peace advocates and social democrats and followers of the NDP, supporters, longtime supporters. They're quite unhappy about the position taken by the leadership of the NDP on this issue of the bombing of Gaza. And one of the more interesting and, I'd say, exemplary letters commenting on the problems of the position taken by Mr. Mulcair and Associates was written by Judy Haven. She's a professor at St. Mary's University in Halifax. And her article is titled Mulcair Wants to Change the Channel on Gaza, and we're joined by Judy Havens. Are you there, Judy?
I'm here. Here right now.
Hey, thanks very much for talking to us. It's quite an eloquent letter, and you seem to be, there seems to be a host of people who agree with you that there's something amiss in the way the NDP reacted to this most recent bombing of Gaza. And you begin with the point that Mulcair, Thomas Mulcair, the NDP leader, began by saying that Israel has a right to defend its citizens, and that Israel, that Hamas is a terrorist organization and must cease its rocket attacks immediately. Maybe, did you start with the idea that perhaps Israel should cease its attacks immediately?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part. Perhaps Israel.
Your point was that that Mulcair seems to have his emphasis behind Israel's
right
to defend itself, and was calling, he claims, more recently in today's Star, for balance. But he doesn't seem to be terribly interested in saying that Israel has to cease its attacks on Gaza.
That's the historic line of the NDP. I don't want people to think that it's ever been different, but now it's just in stark relief. Now that we have 1,900 people dead, 453 of them children, and there are 10,000 people wandering around without limbs, without eyes, who have brain damage and all kinds of other very outrageous injuries caused by Israel, all of a sudden the NDP is saying, well, we're even-handed and we're balanced. I see no evidence of that at all. These two quotations at the beginning of my article, which anyone can read if they go on to the Halifax Media Co-op site, and that's Halifax Media Co-op, I guess.
.ca.
Yep. Anybody can read it. The fact that I've put these two first quotations, that Israel has the right to defend itself, blah-de-blah, and they have a right to defend themselves against Hamas, which is a terrorist organization and must cease its rocket attacks, this is standard stuff. I got this in the National Post. I took this from the Star. I took it from the Globe and Mail, the Sun. Everybody's publishing the same quotations from Mulcair. They're not wrong. In other words, Mulcair actually said these things. The fact is, he cares, it doesn't seem very much, for the Gazan people, except now he wants to start a charitable action with none other than Dr. Abu Laish. To bring ill or very severely wounded children, 100 of them, from Gaza to Canada for treatment, which is, in my view, pornographic. After he's agreed and supported Israel's right to bomb the hell out of them, now he wants to treat the children. That's pornography to me.
Yeah, and today's Star, he sort of added another item. He wants to help rebuild. But, I mean, rebuild to be attacked. You point out in your article that there was attacks in 2008-09 called cast lead or throw lead, which it definitely did. And then there was Operation Pillar of something. And then there was, now it's Operation Protective Edge. And it, by the way, you yourself and others have pointed out, Noam Chomsky and others, that there's an odd language that's in behind this stuff, which is called mowing the lawn, going over there. That's called military, but isn't it actually a punitive? Aren't these punitive expeditions just hurting them, just to say, don't, you know, this is like discipline?
Well, they basically want to take the land. People who are listening to this should not think this is a clash of civilizations, or this is a religious battle, or this is a battle based on morality or anything else. This is all about grabbing the land. I'm Jewish. I've always been Jewish. I went to Holy Blossom. I am a graduate of Holy Blossom Temple in Toronto, and I can tell you it is outrageous that the Jewish community and the NDP, but particularly from my standpoint, the Jewish community is backing Israel's ideas about mowing the lawn, which is the wholesale slaughter of innocent civilians. That's what it translates to. And lately, Norman Finkelstein, who is a leading political scientist and academic in the United States, also Jewish, has called Israel a schnorrer state. I've put this in my article because the word schnorrer in Yiddish means a sponger, a person who uses. And what Finkelstein is saying is that Israel destroys people's lives, destroys the infrastructure, destroys the utilities, the clean water, the electricity, all of this stuff, as well as tens of thousands of people's lives and their homes, and then walks away. And it's up to the Canadian government or NGOs such as Oxfam or Save the Children to go in there and clean up Israel's mess. Mm-hmm. I say no.
Yeah. Well, now, and by the way, I'll tell folks that you're also a member of the, it's the
Independent
Jewish
Voices
Canada, the
Halifax
chapter.
Yep, I am.
And, of course, you've been holding also daily vigils.
Yep. No, it's not a vigil. I don't really agree with vigils.
Oh, I shouldn't use a picket.
No.
Yeah, you're not
it's
a vigil.
Daily picket.
You're
we
a picketer.
Yeah, we stand outside the main public square.
Is it true the cannon goes off every day at noon?
Every day at noon.
So you can't miss your appointments.
Well, we kind of know what time we have to get there.
Isn't it a nice metaphor? I mean, the cannon is going off, and you show up with a sign say, stop firing at people.
That's right. And the cannon goes off on Citadel Hill, which is a historic site. It's a military garrison town, Halifax is.
Yes.
And underneath it, there's the public gardens, this very nice garden that anyone can walk through for free and look at the flowers. And we stand at the gates of the garden with signs such as, you don't need to be Muslim to say, to be sympathetic with the people of Gaza. Signs like that. And we're also collecting signatures right now. We've collected more than 100 signatures just in the last 2 days of passers-by writing letters to the Prime Minister, because I've put out 3 different letters, which I can send you, and people can sign these letters. And these letters are saying, we shouldn't have to clean up for Israel. We're not responsible for this. Israel is. And Canada, tell Israel to stop bombing. So we're hoping that these letters will send to the Prime Minister and maybe we'll get some response.
Yes. This is Judy Havens. She's a professor of St. Mary's University in Halifax. And by the way, account of the pickets are at mediacoop.ca, and you can see photographs, and there is a report. And by the way, it is a fact, isn't it, that there seems to be a kind of a sea change in the way people are reacting across the country. We're seeing very steady demonstrations and pickets, maybe the occasional vigil. You must be taking some heart from that.
Well, we take a bit of heart from that, but every day on the street we find that most Canadians are sympathetic with the Gazan people. Most Canadians here don't have a lot of good to say about Israel and what it's doing. Occasionally we find people who are pro-Israel and pro-Zionist, and they believe very strongly that Israel has the right to bomb people to smithereens. But 95% of the people who stop by us and whom we stop say yes, right on, and sign one of our letters.
One of the substantive issues raised by Thomas Mulcair, I notice he doesn't seem to... He seemed to be moving away from this. When they first made their statements, and it started with Mr. Dewar, who represents the NDP on foreign affairs, they said they wanted to make sure they said Hamas is a terrorist organization. But there are some problems here. The people of Gaza elected Hamas in 2006. And Noam Chomsky, I noticed, pointed this out. This is... The people selected these people. Now, you might have your opinion about them, but if we're going to have resolution, generally it's a good idea to talk to those who have actually won a free and fair election to represent people.
Go ahead. But this is no different from what's happened, from what U.S. imperialism, frankly, has done for years. Now Canada, now Israel's just taking a page out of it. This is absolutely no different. We see all the time that the Americans refuse to speak to the people in charge, even if they were elected. They want what they want, and Israel wants what it wants. It's targeted Hamas as a terrorist organization, even though they helped create or made the ground fertile for Hamas to grow from the late 1980s on. This is a historic fact. And Hamas does represent the people. They did vote for Hamas, and it provides social services and hospital care and all kinds of other things that governments tend to do. The fact that Israel doesn't want to speak to them, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, and by the way, an additional point, some think this is actually the beginning of why the attacks happened. There was a compromise struck between the Palestinian Authority, largely on the West Bank, and the leaders of Hamas in Gaza to form a kind of a technocrat government, is my understanding, in which they didn't actually participate but helped select it. Now, that seemed to have aroused great anger on the part of Israel, but not just Israel, of course, the United States, Canada, and others, who are, it seems to me, kind of, we always want to remember, are enabling this process. Because here they were working out a compromise, which you would think, oh, now maybe we're getting somewhere, and then, but now this happens.
Well, I think the whole idea is Israel really wants the land badly, and they feel that they can get a lot back, and they can control things very well, and they have in the West Bank. In fact, the West Bank government, under Abbas, has done very little to resist the settlements, and has not, their lives of the people have not improved at all in the West Bank. And I can remind your listeners that there's probably 500,000 Israeli settlers in the West Bank. In other words, they're living on Palestinian land illegally, according to the United Nations. Along comes Hamas, and Hamas says, we're not going to take it. We're not going to lie down, just the way Abbas did, and we're going to fight back. Hence the death of some 50-odd Israeli soldiers in this. They won't give up. The Gazans won't give up.
And many are pointing out that ordinarily in human history, that's regarded as heroic when you don't when you don't accept to be occupied. Well, we're speaking to Judy Havens, and she is with the Independent Jewish Voices Canada, Halifax chapter, and she is a professor at St. Mary's University. And I want to ask about this. I spoke to David Heap last week. Of course, he shares many of your concerns. He works with Gaza Arc, and raise the issue that Thomas Mulcair has been trying to reinforce his position by saying, I'm like Jack Layton. Now, what I remember especially about Jack, when he first got to Parliament as a leader, is that he got, people said, oh, he got into hot water because he said we should talk to the Taliban. And so the Tories and others called him Taliban Jack.
Right.
It turned out it didn't hurt his reputation. And as time went by, everybody agreed maybe that was a good idea. And I just wonder, maybe it's time for see if he could put that hat on.
Well, that's what he's hoping.
Why not talk to the elected leadership of Gaza?
Right. And, well, I think now,
and we would move, wouldn't we move a lot further along? I mean,
well, I think it's
somebody could win a few votes that way.
I think it's kind of too late. They've mowed the lawn three times in the last 7 years, 6 or 7 years. By mowing the lawn, they've had wholesale slaughters of innocent children, women, older men, people in nursing homes. They've destroyed 50 or 60 mosques. They've destroyed 50 or 60 or 100 schools, including UN schools. They've killed people who are in UN shelters, which is absolutely against international law. They've destroyed the only, I think it is the only electrical plant that supplies the Gaza with electricity. They've completely destroyed it. Half the people in Gaza have no electricity at all right now. And that can be a health hazard if you need medical equipment or you need to boil water.
Yeah, they destroyed a power station, right? The ability to provide clean water was attacked.
Well, and that's a very typical thing that Israel does. This is Israel's idea. What they really want to do is they want to mow the lawn, they want to cast these people out, they want to clean them out from the land, and they want to take over the land. It's really quite simple. It has nothing to do with religion. It has to do with they want the land. They want the West Bank too, and they want Gaza. And, you know, really, the Palestinians only have 22% of the land in historic Israel and Palestine. Only 22%. And they were supposed to have at least 50% when the Green Line was in operation and from the 1960s on. And they don't have that land.
Mm-hmm. Now, by the way, and in Britain and some other countries, the question is being raised, and it seems to be a rather important one. Why is money flowing from here, from Ottawa, from Washington and London, towards which enables the rearmament, the addition of fresh weapons? In the case of the United States, it's $3 billion a year, isn't it, that goes to the U.S.? To Israel, I think,
with no strings attached, you don't have to
pay back. Which shows it seems to be an enterprise backed by Western capitals. But it would be our job, would it not, to say, why don't you just help out here by cutting off that military aid?
But part of this, as you know, is the military-industrial complex. They want their piece of flesh as well, and their pound of flesh. And so they really want to get in on this war action. And the United States is not, and Obama want to make sure that the big boys who run these corporations can cash in on any war. Mm-hmm. So in a way, the fact that the U.S. Congress, I believe, just passed a bill and gave another $220 million last week alone to Israel to buy U.S.-produced armaments doesn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. But what surprises me is anybody who holds out any hope that Obama is sincerely interested in peace should think twice.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to underline it, your article and that of David Heap and, of course, many other voices is saying there's something wrong with a political culture here that can find no one in Parliament or in the United States Congress virtually who says the obvious about the naked emperor. Although I must say your article in the media co-op, Halifax Media Co-op, makes me wonder if maybe there is some stirring around that something like peace candidates might emerge.
Well, I think that it's very difficult because I think that just as the U.S. is a two-party state, we're a three-party state and a little extra in Quebec. But I think here it's going to be very hard to find people who are willing to run independently and on a pro-peace ballot. Maybe we could get one person, but I'm sure you know that even the Green Party last week, the former president had to resign because he was totally in love with Israel.
That was a remarkable moment, wasn't it?
It was unbelievable. And he said that something to the effect that the Gazans deserved everything they got, and he used the Bible, if you can imagine, to justify his views. Now, I'm sure those are not the views of Elizabeth May, who is the elected parliamentarian, but the president of the party was forced out, of course. Mm-hmm. And so we have not one party in English Canada that is standing up for the victims of Gaza, and I find this appalling. Mm-hmm. Another point that maybe your listeners want to think about, in 1970, around then, or 1971, when the War Measures Act was declared in Canada, the NDP that was led at the time by Tommy Douglas way back then, they said they didn't support the imposition of the War Measures Act because it compromised civil liberties and it was going to lead to a police state. Mm-hmm. As recently as 2002 or 3, Alexa McDonough, who was at that time the head of the NDP, the leader of the NDP, she campaigned actively for Mayor Arar to be returned and for the torture to end of this totally innocent person who was locked up in a Syrian jail because of fake evidence the United States had and faker evidence that the RCMP had. So we've had two examples of leaders of the NDP who stood up for something important. Mm-hmm. Now we have Mulcair saying, me too, let's have a charity, let's cure people, let's do this.
Yes.
But he's on the other hand saying, well, if Israel continues bombing, that's their right.
Yes. That's a little breathtaking. I appreciate that list of NDP leaders who did actually take a stand. It is possible to take one, and actually Canadian population has shown it does appreciate moral leadership. Judy Haven, we're really glad to hear about the pickets.
And the daily pickets, yeah.
And also, I really hope people will go to halifax.mediacoop.ca. Read your article. I'm sure you'll be commenting further, because there seems to be a little uncomfortable movement in the leadership of the NDP. It's going to take more commentary from yourself and others.
Well, Jerry Kaplan had a very good article in the Globe and Mail over the weekend for people who read the Globe. Rick Salutin's banging on about this, Gabor Maté, Paul Weinberg, and now, and of course, Haroon Siddiqui. These are fairly brave people who've actually been writing about this for the whole month of July. Also in July, I wrote some other entries about what was going on the Halifax Media Co-op site. You can read my past articles as well.
Thank you very, very much. Judy Haven, it's good to talk to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And Judy Haven again. She is at St. Mary's University, a professor, and she is also with, I'll get the name of the organization right here in a moment. They're having pickets, as she says. Every day when a cannon goes off in Halifax, they appear in the garden. Sounds like the title of a good play. She is a member of Independent Jewish Voices Canada, Halifax chapter, teaches St. Mary's University. And, of course, last week we had David Heap. And I should have mentioned to Judy that among the targets of the Operation Protective Edge was the boat called Gaza Ark. And when somebody's drawing up a bill of particulars, damage is done. Criminal intent. I hope they keep in mind GazaArk.org, and I hope people, our listeners, will follow that closely. Today's paper, Toronto Star, has a piece titled "Canadians Want a Balanced Approach to Mideast Conflict" by Tom Mulcair, and I would say it's more a reflection of the migraine that has developed amongst peace advocates and social democrats than it is of a toward a solution. In my opinion, everybody waits for the big signal from Washington. They debate about who is managing and profiting and pushing. Washington sets the tone. And earlier we spoke with David Hoyle, and it's very good that the African leaders met with Obama, and let us hope they did raise issues that David Hoyle talked about, which is why Africans come to be prosecuted and nobody else comes to be prosecuted. But the optics are what really should tell you the story. Why do the leaders of Africa have to go and sit down in Washington with this individual? What is this special quality that he possesses that they need to come and get his advice? Because, by the way, it's World Bank IMF advice. It is neoliberalism advice. It's privatization advice. And at the end of the day, it isn't advice. It's an order. David Hoyle pointed out, Mr. Gbagbo said, this is you have courts that discriminate and they're not treating Africans properly. And he was told, you could end up in front of one of them. And what do you know? That's the part that should intrigue us. Phil Conlon is here, by the way. Phil has a wonderful show. It's Wednesday, 6 p.m., Classical Underground. And we're going to be visited on the 18th by Mr. Williams, the father of Serena and Venus. Can you want to tell us again what that?
Yes, he's written a book called Black and White, The Way I See It. Always an interesting subject in the United States, always timely. And he'll be on at a different book list on Monday, August 18th. That's a week from tonight at 5:30 p.m. That's at 746 Bathurst Street. And that's for a book signing. And then there'll be a talk, a book signing, and a reception on Tuesday the 19th at 6:30 p.m. At the Miller Lash House at 130 Kingston Road, Scarborough. And copies of the book will be available on both occasions at a reduced price of $25. These are events sponsored by a different book list in partnership with the University of Toronto's Scarborough Department of Athletics and Recreation And Simon & Schuster, the publisher, is supporting it. That's nice. I'm glad to see the publisher's doing a little bit.
He's a very important figure in my mind. He broke through the apartheid wall of American elite sports.
And boy, that was the elite of the elite sports. That sport was as white as the balls and the uniforms they wore.
As the little white shorts. That's true. By the way, he comes, we had to say this culturally, quite interesting. The breakthroughs, when they have come previous, was in Los Angeles, because they once produced the great Pancho Gonzalez, who was dominated tennis when he once he got on the scene. But by the way, even in his years as the dominant player, Gonzalez, who came out of the playgrounds of Los Angeles, was not allowed in certain clubs. And that was not challenged. He didn't challenge it. They simply said, no, Pancho, you can't play here where no Mexican-Americans allowed. But he was the greatest player of his time. But I think that the tragedy or the tragic aspect of it is that you see these breakthroughs, but they can't be sustained. Because it takes individual courage and brilliance, in the case of the father of Venus and Serena Williams, who's written this very important book and will be here on the 18th, a different book list. It was his brilliance and all that did it. But you see, that how do you sustain it? In fact, we have very few black golfers, sport built around clubs, private clubs, gated guys. And then same with tennis. It's a gated outfit, pretty much. And it needs to be won entirely. But he tells us how he did it. And he tells us a lot about racism in America. And so I really urge everybody to make sure they attend that. You've been listening to the Taylor Report, and it's at CIUT 89.5 FM, and you can write to us, taylor@ciut.fm, Facebook.com/The Taylor Report, and we're very grateful for Phil was here, and Andy and Associate, and we will see you next week.